Good morning to everybody. You know what John was saying earlier is true, that you get up here to share a little bit about your life story, and you guys are getting to participate in a very real-time day for Meredith and I. We were at the hospital for about 4 hours two nights ago. Our fourth child is due kind of any minute. And so I kid you not that if Meredith stands up, we are literally leaving and going to the hospital. So I don't know if there's a plan B for someone to get up here and share something, but if you are the plan B, you actually may want to review your notes. So my name is McKittrick Simmons. Meredith and I are actually very glad to be here this morning. I don't know, you know, after when you spend time in the labor and delivery part of Piedmont Hospital, you know, there's a lot of intense things happening in that part of the hospital. Have any of you guys ever heard of Jim Gaffigan, the comedian? Jim Gaffigan's got a great skit about having a fourth child. We have a 6-year-old, 4-year-old, and 3-year-old. So we live kind of a life of luxury at home. And he's got this great skit where he's talking about when they went from their third to fourth kid. He said, you know, having a fourth kid's really no big deal at all. He's like, it's just like being out in the middle of the ocean drowning, but a boat comes up to you and it throws you a baby. So we were watching that skit and we were kind of laughing and crying at the same time. So hopefully Meredith will not go into labor. This will probably be a little bit shorter than I would have liked it to have been. I won't need the full 90-minute allotment that they gave me. And another thing I was thinking driving here this morning is, every time I introduce myself, so McKittrick Simmons, even in Atlanta, which has a lot of last names as first names, you know, McKittrick Simmons is kind of an unusual name. And now anytime I introduce myself to somebody, I think about some of my best friends and I were down near Americus about a month ago, and one of the quail guides, we were introducing ourselves to this quail guide whose name was Buck. And I've learned since then that I think Buck is kind of like Madonna. I think his name is Buck. I don't even know if he has a last name. He was like, that's my name. So he's introducing himself to our friends, and you know, hi, I'm John. You know, hi, I'm John Phelps. Oh, John, good to meet you. Hi, I'm Rob Forrester. Oh, Rob, so glad you guys are down here. He comes to me, hey, I'm McKittrick Simmons. And he just goes, okay. And just moved on, you know. This morning I wanted to share something with you guys. I wanted to share about a couple things. You know, the timing of doing this for me really fits in kind of a deeper narrative of what's going on in my life and Meredith's life. Because I have been asked, I think, 4 times in the last 6 months to come to retreats or gatherings and share about my life. And I don't think people are asking me to do that because I'm an accomplished speaker, I have any great thoughts on anything. And it's interesting because when people ask me to share about my life, I actually don't really like sharing about my life, if I'm totally honest with you. Because there's a lot of things about my life or my life story that I really wish were different. And so when Clark Gore has been a great friend to me, Bob Voiles has been a great friend to me. So when they said, hey, we want you to come and share something at the Real Estate Prayer Breakfast, my immediate thought really is I'd really rather not do that. That's not something that I would enjoy doing. But there's been this theme about me sharing a little bit about my life story that Meredith and I, so I went and talked to some of my friends and said, they asked me to do this, I don't want to do it. And they're like, oh, you're definitely doing that. You know, when you share about your life, it's challenging because I think you kind of have to remind yourself about the story of your life. Because I have a story of my life that I want to tell you, and then there's the story of my life the way it actually is. And stories are powerful things. You know, all of us, I'm fascinated with people's stories. It's a powerful thing to get to share your story with people. And that's how Jesus talked. Jesus was great at telling stories. He was always telling stories about things. And so I thought, you know, I probably need to just confess to you guys. I'm not a Catholic, but I feel like I should start with a little bit of a confession that I don't know how emotional I'll get during this or not. Sometimes when I talk about things like this, I get very emotional. Sometimes I don't. But this is a difficult, some of these things are difficult things for me to talk about. The other thing is I was thinking about this. I was praying about what to talk about. I realized immediately my need that when I talk, how much I want to impress you guys. Like, there's just this thing you want to get up when I, you know, you just want people to be impressed with you. And I just thought, you know, my need or desire for you all to be impressed with me is not going to help the spirit of what's trying to happen here. So let me just say a quick prayer and just try to set that aside for a second. Let me just say a quick prayer for us. Lord, thanks for gathering us here this morning. Lord, this is a moment. This is definitely a moment in our lives. It's a powerful thing when we all gather together. And Lord, I confess my desire that I want to be the greatest. And I have these things that really distract from just talking about some of the things that you've done. So I just pray that we could all take a moment and just pause, stop thinking about the many things that we're going to have to do today, and just be here. In Jesus' name. So as we were growing up, so I'm one of five kids. Grew up in Atlanta, and I was kind of living the American dream for most of my childhood. A lot of you guys probably knew my parents, Greg and Christy Simmons. We had a lot of life going on in our house. There's four girls and me. Thankfully, I was the oldest of the five. And so as I was growing up, there was these, I was having these great experiences with my parents because my parents were really good at making love available for us. We did not have to work hard to feel loved. And I can remember all these things that we would do. You know, Dad coached all my soccer teams and we're playing Buckhead baseball. He would take me on trips with him to New York. I remember sitting in these boardrooms and he'd be working on something and I'd be drawing on the whiteboard. And so all through, we all went to Trinity School. And so I feel like I was just kind of living the boy's life. I can remember times. I remember this one time Dad and I were at Melvin's. If you remember Melvin's, he'd take me to breakfast there once a week. And he found out that the waitress who waited on us every week's house had burnt down. And at the end of it, when we were leaving, I just remember he left a $100 bill on the counter. And I was like 10 years old. To me, a $100 bill was like $1 million. And I just remember looking at that $100 bill going on the table, and he didn't say anything, and we just left. And I just remember thinking how big he was. You know, there's something when I looked at my dad, I was like, wow, that's a big man, that he just cared about that waitress. I can remember us driving home and hearing on the radio that the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra was auctioning the right to conduct the symphony, the Star-Spangled Banner. So he called in, just took the auction because he wanted to do it. We had this big party. So we were doing all these really, we were always doing these really, really fun things together as a family. And I don't know if you guys know Dennis Pete. We were friends with this guy named Dennis Pete. He was a former Black Panther. We were always having these kind of young life urban things at our house. So when I graduated from Trinity, one day we go up to our farm. Our family has a farm in Highlands, North Carolina. And go up there with three of my sisters, and we're up there playing at the farm, and I've got a friend up there with me. And we went on a hike that morning. There's a place called Statula Falls, and it had been a very dry summer in Highlands. And as we hiked up the waterfall that day, Dad grabbed onto a tree. We hiked up to the very top, and Dad grabbed onto this tree that broke. I guess it had died because of the drought. And he fell down about a 300-foot waterfall. And I was there. I was there with my sisters. I was the oldest. And so just in a moment, he was gone, just like that. He fell to his death. And I had to get my sisters down from the waterfall, and it was just this moment in my life where it was just a tragedy. You know, Dad was gone. Mom was back in Atlanta. And so we, you know, eventually made our way back. And, you know, that was this moment in my life where I was 12 years old at that time. And when you're 12 years old, you're old enough. You're old enough to start asking some harder questions. You're actually starting to think about life and what's going on. And so that was a very, very painful time for our family. And it really sent my relationship in terms of faith for me had been completely academic. I was raised in a Christian family. You know, we went to church. You know, we were kind of going through the motions of that. Not going through the motions, but as a kid, I just, you know, it wasn't real to me. And so I had this experience with the Lord because at that point in my life, that summer, I was in so much pain and I was so sad that I remember sitting at my dad's grave one day, and I remember praying or talking to the Lord and saying, you know, I have got to have something to ease this pain, because he was my hero. And I couldn't understand as a 12-year-old why would you take one of the men who's generous, who loves his wife, who loves his children, who does all the, who's constantly trying to help people? As a 12-year-old, I could not understand why the Lord would take one of the good men, you know? And at that point, I just had this moment with the Lord, and I can remember very clearly saying, Lord, you know, if you are who you say you are in the scriptures, and you actually feel this pain with us, and you comfort the one, you comfort people who are in pain, you deal with, you come and meet people where they are, I'll give you my whole life, because I have to have something that is real right now. But if this is just a cultural thing, if what we're doing here as well, if you grew up in the Southeast U.S., you're a Christian. If you grew up in China, you're this. If you grew up in South America, you're this. If this is just a cultural thing, then I have got to go find something else that will actually help me with what's going on right now. I have to have something. And it's hard to translate. It's hard to translate these moments with the Lord. But really, there is a moment as I sat there at my dad's grave that the Lord, in the way that he has spoken to me, I think he speaks to all of us very differently. He made it very clear right in that moment. He just told me, I love you. And it was just a very real thing. I can remember what it felt like to sit there, and I just felt the presence of the Lord really for the first time in my life. I felt that the Lord was just there with me. And you know, that actually didn't answer my questions. And I still have a lot of questions that I feel like I wrestle with the Lord with. I still don't understand why, you know? There's a lot of things I watch happen every day. I'm like, I just do not understand why. But there's been this theme in my life that the Lord has always been there and said, I love you. And so, honestly, to this day, there are a lot of days that that's enough for me. There's a lot of days that I live my life, and I feel very loved by the Lord, and I feel very secure in that. And then there's some days where that's still not enough for me. And I'm a little upset about it, and I don't like what's going on. And as we went, and I remember that summer, so I was going from transitioning schools. After that, so my mom raised, never remarried, so she raised the five of us. She was a widow at 41, raised the five of us by herself. And my mom did a remarkable job with all of us to continue to speak these things and do things that helped us connect a little bit deeper with the real existence of the Lord. Not the academic one, the cultural one that you can kind of pin on your jacket, the one that's actually present when you're in pain. And I remember the first day at Pace, so I'm 12 years old, my dad had died 60 days before. We're driving to school, and my mom says, I had a friend who we played Buckhead baseball with, this really great guy. And the year before, he wasn't paying attention, and he'd taken a line drive right in the face, and it detached both of his retinas. And so he couldn't see. So on the way to school, and he was a friend of mine, we went to Trinity, we're both going to Pace. So as I'm walking into my first day at this new school in seventh grade, and all I am thinking about is myself. I am just thinking about, how do I make friends? I want to be popular. You know, it's just this thing you have when you're 12 years old. My mom says, hey, when you get there, I want to make sure you wait on Andrew, and you wait down in the parking lot until he gets there, because I want you to carry his books in. He's going to need help getting from class to class. Which to me was like, you've got to be kidding, you know? I am feeling every insecure feeling you can feel walking into a new school, and you want me to wait for someone who's not going to be the captain of the basketball team, you know? But the way, if any of you guys know my mother, you know how she is. This was not a suggestion. This is like, well, this is what you're doing. And so sure enough, I did. So I got there, all the kids are walking in, and I sat there in the parking lot, and I waited for Andrew. And I carried his books, and that first year, I would help him get from class to class. And as I reflect back on something like that, my mom, even in this moment of where we are in all this pain, she really had this amazing vision of saying, I want you to make sure you see people and you actually care for the people around you. Through the rest of, you know, if I fast forward just a little bit, my sisters and I are still very close. And I reflect about what life was like, you know, kind of growing up without a father. There's this scripture where it says that if you want to be religious about something, at one point they went and asked Jesus. They said, so what is religion? All these religious people were like, well, we want to win. How do we be the best religion in the world? He said, if you want to be religious, then you should care about orphans, fatherless children, and widows. If you're going to do something, make sure you do it every day, then you go take care of people who don't have a father, you take care of people who don't have parents. And what we have seen in our life is how generous the Lord has been to us. Because as we move forward, my mom ended up having a lot of health issues. that, and I can only tell you good things about my mom. I really kind of honor the way she raised us. But she was not able to be a part of our lives at different points because she had some health issues. She was not able to attend some graduations. She was not able to attend some weddings. And so what happened to me is that I ended up kind of feeling this burden, this pressure, to kind of be the man of the house, you know, when I was 13 years old. And so when I would, you know, my sisters have donuts for dads, I don't want my sisters to be at Donuts for Dads alone. And so I'd go for Donuts for Dads in my letter jacket, you know. And when they walk down the aisle at their wedding, I've gotten to give my sisters away. And mom has been there as much as she could. But there are sometimes in our life where the five of us kind of felt like we were having to figure all this stuff out on our own. And so the thing that, as I reflect back on it now, you know, Meredith and I have been married for 10 years. We've had 3 kids. We've got our 4th on the way. The experience I had with the Lord at that time, where he told me that he loved me, that has really proven to be true. And I'm able to connect. I really feel able to connect with the Lord anytime I make myself available to him. And my biggest issue in life is just how distracted I am. You know? So you go through some pain. Well, the great thing about pain, and I'm sure some of you all have stories like this, the great thing about pain is that it totally resets the way you think about things, and the way you see things. And C.S. Lewis had this great image. You know, he was an amazingly articulate guy, where he talked about that he believed in the sun. He said, you know, the sun comes up, and I believe in the sun, not because that I see the sun, but because of what I see around the sun, because I can see all things through that. It's what it illuminates. So I've come to the point where I feel I've actually started to feel kind of grateful for some of the things that we've been through. Because when I was 13 years old, I was just thinking about some different things than probably most 13-year-olds were thinking about. One other interesting thing, I don't know if y'all will get this or kind of think, well, gosh, that's a little odd, but the Lord also, over time, I've had a lot of, he's kind of come and he's been present to me in some dreams. Right after Dad died, I had a dream where I feel like the Lord really came to me, and he wanted me to know that my father, because of the way he died, I was concerned that he was hurt. You know, as a 12-year-old boy, you don't want your dad to be hurt. And he came and told me that my father was basically okay. And as a result of that, I wrote a letter to some friends of ours. And I wrote a letter and said, I know you all are probably struggling with this. Well, the Lord came and told me that Dad's okay. And the Lord came and told me that he's actually going to walk with us through this. That letter somehow made its way. There's a guy named Ravi Zacharias, made into Ravi's hands. So one day Ravi comes over to our house. He said, hey, I just read this letter you wrote, and I want to use it in one of my books. I was 13 years old. If I was in the real estate business, I would have gotten royalties out of it, you know. but he goes, hey, I want to use this in my book. I didn't think about the royalties. I was like, okay, if you want to use my letter, that's fine, you know. And Ravi, and then all these other men started coming in to our life. And I would tell you, the Lord, despite that loss, it's amazing how generous he's been to me and to our family. All through high school, I don't know if he's here this morning, so all through high school, John Whelan would take me to breakfast every week. He was a friend of my father's. I don't remember one thing John and I talked about at those breakfasts. If you know John, he's actually not that talkative of a guy a lot of the time. What I do remember is that John taking me to breakfast was something that really set something in place in my life in high school that made a huge difference. And it's reminded me now, we should not underestimate how powerful it is for us to be available to the people around us. I mean, it is such a powerful thing for any of us, the people we work with, the people in our companies, it is such a powerful thing when we will just make ourselves available to be with people. And that is one of those things that is completely underestimated. And so, I guess in conclusion, when I kind of talk about where Meredith and I are now, you know, we feel like we're having this. We keep reminding each other that this thing about faith and this thing about walking with Jesus, it can be a very academic thing for us still. But our experience is that it is a very real thing in our life. And there is a difference in my day if I can walk in the Spirit or if I do not walk in the Spirit. And so, you know, you look around this room, I don't know, 100 of you. I bet every single thing that could be happening in a person's life is probably happening right now. And for some of you, you walk in the room this morning, and this is just fuel to the flame. You are totally in the, you are already in the zone with the Lord. This is an encouragement. You're going to walk out. You're going to keep doing what you're doing. Some of us are probably in a time of just of great sadness, maybe in the process of making a lot of regrets. And what Meredith and I are trying to do, we feel like right now, is we are just trying to make ourselves available to experience the Lord. There's one at one point, you know, when Peter went to Jesus, and you know, Peter was the guy, he's founded the whole Christian church, right? So the whole Christian church, Peter was this guy. And he says, Jesus, what do I have to do? What do you want me to do? And Jesus basically responded to him and said, I just want you to take care of my sheep. And so Jesus' great interest in the world was people. And so we're all in the people business, but Jesus was really in the people business. And so we're just trying to translate our life every day in a way that we're aware of the people around us and we can experience the Lord every day. Because when we make ourselves available to it, the Lord's been really good to us. But I just know what it's like. There's this other thing where Jesus says, all of you are like seeds. It's like Jesus is like a farmer. You're all like seeds, and he's planted us here. And he's planted us all here to go and bear fruit. He said, but some seeds get planted on things, and it just doesn't get watered. It's just not encouraged. I can tell you my issue is when he talks about the cares of the world can choke things out, that's really my issue. It's that the cares of the world just start to kind of interfere. And so we're doing everything we can to try to just step back and simplify things and just say, you know, the Lord really loves us. He's told me that on a number of occasions. And the more we can stand in front of each other, even to stand up here with you all and just say, you know, I really need help for people to encourage me to make myself available to the Lord. I really do. So in that way, this is kind of like Atlanta's biggest small group. And I really ask for your help in that. And so I just want to encourage, I guess a parting thought is I just want to encourage wherever all of us are this morning, you know, this is a moment when we sit together. This is a moment where I think all of us can just make ourselves available to the Lord. Because if you read the book of Acts, people come to the Lord in just completely different ways. It happens differently every time. There's no formula for it. You know, it's good. It's been good for me, even just to stand up here and just reflect on my life. It's been a thing over the last couple of days that's kind of helped me reconnect to the Lord in a different way. But so anyway, I appreciate being here with you guys, and thank Clark and Bob for asking me to come up and share.